Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Kleifeld with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender book, film and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Denise Norris, transgender activist, worldwide lecturer on every subject, but especially on transgender rights. Denise, good night. Good evening.
Good evening, Nate. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on our show. Listen, I'm going to just ask a simple question. We'll probably take 30 minutes to answer. Is transgender rights, where are we now on transgender rights from where we've come from? Tell me where we are right now.
Well, we've come a long way. Back when I started this in the early 90s, there was nothing, really. There was some protections in New York State for post-operative transsexual women due to Rene Richards out of the 70s. But we've come a long way. We've got a long way to go. There's a great deal more social acceptance than there was 20 years ago. I was actually reading an article yesterday where it said that an increasing number of people are in favor of transgender rights. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was refreshing to see because, you know, when I started this, you know, you wouldn't even see something like that in the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
But if there had to be a comparison, you had 1969 to 1994 when I got into this pretty much. It was 25 years. And that was when the LGB community was getting its feet on the ground, was starting to have the internal organization necessary to start pushing for the later things like marriage equality, just basic rights equality. And so in some ways, the transgender community is reaching a point where we are organized enough to stand up and be counted and say, you know, we want our basic rights. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of folks in LGBT, you've had basic rights in New York State for 10-plus years. Other places, the sexual orientation has been there.
Mm-hmm.
Transgender is still missing. I mean, New York State, we have no transgender rights. We can't get it passed. We've been promised a number of times along the way, yeah, we got sexual orientation now, we'll get you in, and we're still out here waiting, fighting, organizing. So we've got work to do, but we've come a long way.
You mentioned something about 1994 and 1969. There's a famous article in The Advocate in 1994, I believe it's August 20th, that talks about the 25th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising. People were planning that, and oops, they forgot transgender in their planning. Tell us about that.
Well, you know how it goes. LGBT wasn't even in existence then. There was no transgender either. We hadn't reached that organizational point. We were just starting to. And a couple of things happened in the early 90s that acted as sort of like the seed crystal in a saturated solution, sugar solution. You know, you drop one little crystal in and voila, you have rock candy.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one of these was the brutal rape and murder of Brandon Tina.
Yes.
And the misreporting, even within LGB, what we later called LGB, at the time was GNL,
mm-hmm.
Media of Brandon being a butch lesbian, which, you know, hello, it's a trans man to anybody who knew anything.
Right.
And that kind of started to galvanize us that we need to get out there because people are killing us off. And then came along the gay games, and the gay games said, oh, no, we'll bring transsexuals in, but goodness gracious, they have to be 5 years post-op, and they have to have medical proof. They haven't had a drop of testosterone in their system for, you know, like the alcoholic coming off a bender. And we got upset, and we said, you know, I think the flyer that got passed out was gay games to transsexuals drop dead. And we had some meetings with gay games, and they quickly realized that their policy was overkill. And they said, no, you know, we're going to be fair. And they were the first major organization that listened to our concerns. And we were still not transgender yet. What we were was a bunch of independently operating groups, loosely affiliated, trying to do something, kind of like 1970, you know, 1971 for gay and lesbian community.
Right.
And there's never been a problem with, like, a guy in a dress sneaking in to do the women's shot put in the gay games.
Mm-hmm.
But then we came up to a real problem. It was the 25th anniversary of Stonewall. I'm in New York City. A few of us are in New York City. We have this huge parade, mile-long flag, march past the UN was the original goal, and to affirm our rights. Well, Ellen G. rights. And at that point, nobody's ever heard of Sylvia Rivera. I don't know if you know the name. You should. She threw the first bottle at Stonewall.
Right.
And this was what we would call a transgender woman now, a transsexual, a drag queen, however you want to define it, but someone who clearly gender expression was at odds with what society expected.
Mm-hmm.
And we were being completely forgotten. In fact, we were told we could march in the alternative parade, and I think that was so we didn't embarrass the mainstream gay and lesbian community.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't like this. And we started to organize protests. We actually, I think it was Phyllis Fry out of Texas who said we'd block the parade route with our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a little while, a lot of politicking. We eventually, the Lesbian Avengers, one of the first groups to break ranks.
Leslie,
and
I love
say
it.
That transgendered folks or transsexual women and transsexual men belong in the parade. And
mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the watershed event, which led to the formation of LGB and T as mm-hmm. a nationwide and later worldwide acronym for our entire family.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about, you know, some of the other discriminations. I mean, I think you mentioned something about you had to be five in order to be in the gay games. The original rule was you had to be 5 years after the assignment surgery and not a drop of testosterone. Just in the, outside of the gay games, just in practical terms, right now, how difficult is it in the workplace for a transgender male or female just beginning the journey, not just starting the journey, whether it's, you know, hormonal or therapy or something? What type of protections are there in the workplace for someone who is just beginning the journey?
Well, that's going to vary pretty much to your employer. I mean, certainly there are places where T is a protected class.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're, let's just assume for the moment it's not protected, like in New York State and most places. A lot of employers are putting better and better T services, incentives, if you want to call it, or benefits in place.
Mm-hmm.
My employer, Accenture, we have one of the most advanced programs in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We have what would probably be the platinum standard for medical benefits,
mm-hmm.
where a transitioning individual, if they choose to transition, because not all people who are transgender
mm-hmm.
choose to transition. They're not necessarily transsexual, but what transgender is when gender expression presents opposite or contrary to what society expects of us. So it's kind of like how society sees us on some levels.
Yes.
So when you say just starting out, maybe if you're thinking the Philippines, for example, it may be someone who's just a cross-dresser
mm-hmm.
by the common meme,
mm-hmm.
And that's what they would refer to themselves in the Philippines. So I'm not using a term for folks that they don't want to use,
mm-hmm.
and they just want to come to work that way. They don't want to have a sex change surgery or anything like
right.
that. So it's going to be based on your employer. Here in the U.S., for example, at Accenture, we have transition guidelines, we have medical benefits, we have very strong anti-harassment and anti-discrimination protections built into the corporate policy. But that necessarily is not true for your mother and mom-and-pop shop type of
right.
operation.
Right.
And HRC's done some good work on that by making 25% of the CEI mm-hmm. transgender-related protections.
That's correct.
And services.
Okay, I'm going to go over some of the terminology because you mentioned something about saying the word cross-dresser, and that would be I know there's many terms that I've just learned on my journey in being educated on transgender issues. Gender orientation, gender expression, and gender identity, all three different. Could you help us with those definitions?
Okay. Gender expression is how we present to the external world. Nothing to do with gender identity. Gender expression may agree with gender identity. Gender identity is who we are, how we perceive our gender. And that may be fixed. It may be fluid. It may be opposite our natal birth gender expression. So what clothes I wear, how I cut my hair, my mannerisms, what my body looks like, these are all aspects of gender expression. And this is what's visible to the public. Gender identity is a very internal, very private and completely invisible to
mm-hmm.
the public aspect of ourselves. And in fact, no one can test or prove what someone's gender identity really is. We have no medical tests. We have no real psychological tests that can say for sure that someone's gender identity is female.
Correct. Yeah, I knew that. So where does some? I mean, you mentioned Accenture has a written policy for the harassment, for medical needs, for guidelines and things like that. Where does somebody go to get that type of information, what you just said, and also learn more about what would be offensive words, what would be non-offensive words in speaking with or speaking about transgender male or females?
Okay, well, GLAAD is the first step for terminology. They have some really great resources, you know, like things like saying, don't call someone transgendered because we don't call them gayed.
Yeah.
So if you want to know some of the more politically correct or generally it won't get you in trouble to say words, mm-hmm. and words you don't say, I would say GLAAD your first stop.
That's the Gay and Lesbian Alliance for Anti-Discrimination, and that's GLAAD.org, and there is a special transgender button on that. So please go look at that and tell your friends about it. I believe also Brian McNaught has a thing on BrianMcNaught.com, a very similar type of words to use, not only for transgender but also for gays and lesbians. I have to give Brian a little plug there. He's our friend.
Yeah, of course. And he has this great thing going on at the museum, which is the transitions, which shows us the history of the creation of the what we might call the I don't want to know if I want to use the word transgender movement, but the whole transgender
history
and how we got to where we are today.
Yeah, I just want to.
The other thing is Out and Equal. OutandEqual.org has, they're the workplace group. They do the LGBT workplace.
Right.
And so for folks looking to get more involved, what they can do for their workplace, what they can even help with their own employers doing if they're going to be allies for a transgender community, Out and Equal is the place to start.
Right. And I just want to give a little plug for the Stonewall National Museum and Archives. Next Friday, March the 30th, Denise will be honored with the Spirit of Stonewall Award, Spirit of Pride Award, excuse me, at the Stonewall National Museum and Archives, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The event is free and open to the public. The Stonewall National Museum is located at 1300 East Sunrise Boulevard in the ArtServe Building, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. For more information, go to StonewallNationalMuseum.org. Oh, there, I did my whole little plug. I just want to tell you it was funny about that trend. Not funny, but it's actually we've had a lot of incredible feedback from the straight community on the transitions exhibit. You've not been to our museum. It's located in a public library, not in the gay neighborhood of Fort Lauderdale, and we have about a third of our traffic comes in by accident. They come into our door because we have a prettier awning than the public library. Honestly, I swear, it's just kind of, it's this beautiful red awning, and people are attracted to red, you know, like a bullfighter. So about a third of the people that walk in the front door, we change their minds. We really love to do it. The front desk, today I was at the front desk, and a woman walked in. I believe she was a transit driver, I guess her bus had a little stop. We were on a bus stop. And she walked in, and she says, "Is this the library?" I said, "Well, this is the Stonewall National Museum and Archives." And she turned around, and she looked at the wall, and she said, "I have a brother who is," and she didn't know the word. She was trying to, she was going to say something, and she wasn't sure if it was the right word. And I said, "He transitioned, and he's a transgender female now." And she said, "Yes." We really had a good little talk there, and I showed her the exhibit. And she said she had never seen anything physical except some, you know, stuff in the newspaper, some, you know, salacious headlines about a positive history of the transgender movement or the transgender history. I think it's called transgender history. Transitions is transgender history. I think that's in the title.
Yeah, I actually saw it in Dallas when it was on loan for Out and Equals conference.
That's right. Yeah, you did.
So, and in fact, the Transsexual Menace, a group I founded in 1994, is listed on it. I was like, ooh. And proud as a peacock walking around afterwards pointing out to all of my coworkers.
Right.
See, I did that.
We'll have to get a picture of you in front of that panel. Remind me to do that next Friday. I'll be there. Okay. Now back to some of our questions. You are also an employee of Accenture. What is your title there?
Well, I am a systems analyst. I kind of do work for clients. I support in their business process outsourcing, so I will actually, the client will give Accenture certain responsibilities, duties, or processes to perform for the client, and I'm part of the teams that do those, that do that work. At the very same time, in the work with the employee resource group, the LGBT employee resource group, I am a global lead for transgender workplace inclusion, and that's countries all around the world.
I was going to mention global. How many countries does Accenture work in right now?
Oh, God, it would be easier to say how many countries don't they work in.
Okay.
Name one, and we probably do.
It's over 100, I counted just a little while ago.
Yeah, it's very, very extensive. We have offices from, of course, U.S., Europe, Southeast Asia, Australia, China, Japan. The list is endless, and it's fascinating for me because my work has been how do I create a unified global best practices.
Right,
and
right.
Allow for individual cultural sensitivities.
Right.
You know, and in the U.S., we don't have national health. It doesn't look like our national health, if we have one, will cover transgender work at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But in other countries, we have it. So how does a multinational company develop a policy for medical benefits? You know, do we do supplemental insurance? Do you know, how do we handle all these things? It's just it's something I don't think I've ever heard inside the transgender community, a discussion about, well, we're reaching the global stage. How do we handle this?
Correct, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I was going to say, what is the standard if you're looking with cultural differences, political differences, economic differences? Sure.
Yeah, and the most important thing is cultural, because transgender is – vague. I mean, even inside the U.S., some people think it only means transsexuals. Some people think it's silent. Well, I'll tell you that joke in a second.
Okay, we will.
You know, some people think it's much broader. The term's been around for decades. Before even Virginia Prince, it's just Christine Jorgensen even called herself a transgender in the 60s or the late 60s or 70s. And what does it really mean? And to me, and the way I approach this is a very, very inclusive definition. And the concept to me is transgender is anyone who has had or will have a nonconforming gender expression. It has nothing to do with gender identity. It's how we present ourselves to society. So it's a very inclusive term. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm looking at this from a global perspective, I say, well, Southeast Asia, you know, the transgender is a lot more blurry, especially because they have a religion. A Hindu has dual sexual gods, dual gendered gods. And so gender is differently looked culturally. And we'll find that effeminate gay men will identify as transgender more than gay in some cultures. And so we have to allow for that type of embodiment or embracing of different ways of approaching, you know, gender expression in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask a really simple question. We have all sorts of listeners out there, gay, straight. We have a pretty broad audience. What's the benefit? What is the benefit to an employer? What is the bottom line benefit to an employer for giving transgender rights, equality, benefits, inclusion? What are the benefits to the employer?
Bottom line, it's a talent war out there. In a large organization, it's a war to get the best and brightest employed at your facility.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we have benefits, regardless of whether they're for transgender, people of color, LNG, people with disabilities, is that we want to be able to attract the very best talent to our organization. And the smarter organization says, we don't care if they're color, we don't care what their religion, what their nationality is, or whether they are in a wheelchair. We don't care who they choose as a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And the most advanced organizations, companies like Accenture, is one of the top 10 places in the world to work for, says we don't care how they identify as. What we care is what they can accomplish for the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why and the justification to give these benefits, which are really not costly at all, Because in fact, most transgendered folks have already done it, you know, in the workplace. We're through surgery. I'm 20 years post-op about a week and a half ago. And we're not looking to come in and take advantage of medical benefits. We're looking for jobs. And we're and the employer who says, well, we welcome you, we're going to work twice as hard for it. So it comes down to attracting and maintaining and retaining the very best talent. One of the interesting things I learned working with this at Accenture is that for a non-diversity employee to replace them, it's about 100% of their annual salary to replace an employee. That includes recruiting, training, and everything else. For a diversity talent, because it's harder to get us and find us, it's almost 300% of salary, because to find diverse candidates, to recruit into that community, and one of the things we talked about at Accenture is actually recruiting directly to transgender community and how that would be approached, it's much more expensive to replace us. So they want to make sure that once we get on board, we want to stay.
Right.
And that's not just for transgender. There are people who are allies who say, I feel good working for a company that is so inclusive that transgender folks have these protections.
That's true. That would be. I'm always happy to hear someone like you who really understands and can articulate. I can understand it. I cannot articulate as well as you. You are a rock star with this. Okay, well, let's get to our joke.
LGBT.
LGBT. I have been telling this joke all week long, but I wait till my friends have coffee in their mouth so that they spit them out.
But it's not a joke. Unfortunately, the sad part is it's one of those, we make it into a joke because it is a very painful truth about the relationship of T inside LGBT.
Right.
So we'll go ahead and tell the joke. Everybody get coffee in your mouth.
Denise Norris has an incredibly funny statement. It's LGBT. It's not a French word. The T is not silent. I laugh every time. I know I shouldn't be laughing because it's very sad, actually. But it is very sad.
In fact, I saw a cartoon the other day, political ad, believe it or not, a political cartoon. And it's this hole that LGB is letters, anthropomorphized letters, are climbing out of on a rope, and they're huffing and puffing, and they get to the top, and they're at the top out of the hole. They're jumping up and down. Wow, we made it. Same-sex marriage, repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And then the final frame is you're still down back in the hole, and there's T climbing up by itself going, hey, guys, wait for me. You know, I'm still down here.
Exactly.
And you know, the way we look at it in the transgender community, you know, we helped form LGBT for better or worse. And I think it was for better. I think when we're making a socio-political statement, the more people we have, the better. And we've quietly said, you know, hey, okay, you know, we're letting you guys go first because we're told, you know, once we get to our spot, we're going to help you along. And it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
There's a lot of misconception within the gay and lesbian community right now about transgender rights. I think it's misunderstood in the outside of the heterosexual community. But I've heard so many different statements from gay people in the last 30 years that I've been out that have been really bizarre. That what are you talking about? We have gender, you know, our gender has been discriminated against for hundreds of years, and theirs is too. What is the difference between our identity expression, orientation, and a transgenders? And they look at me going, eh? But it is. I think our own community has a long, long way to go.
Well, partially that is we used to be one community before the 1900s. And then science started to dissect us and bisect us and categorize us. And, you know, we came up with words like transsexual and transgender. I mean, these are only not even 100 years old terms.
Really?
And we started to get separated. And, medical science in some ways looked at us and said, well, we can help those poor people who want to change their sex. You know, we're getting surgeries in. You know, the first surgeries were done in the 30s in Germany. Christine Jorgensen was just the most famous one of the surgeries that were being done. And so we started to get separated. But still in our undergrounds, we were one community. In the 69, as I said, we were everybody was at Stonewall, LGBT.
Mm-hmm.
And right. And then after that, we got lost again because some people, and this is still a problem, felt that, well, society could better see us as, you know, the next door neighbors if we didn't have to explain why our cousins want to change their sex.
Oh, yeah.
You look at the parades like the Radical Fairies, and you look at Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence and how much difficulty they had in what were originally our pride protest marches,
correct,
which now became our Happy Day, St. Patrick's Day type fun parade. They didn't want to be visible, just like Stonewall 25. Then this was our core argument with Stonewall 25. They didn't want us to be visible. They want
right.
tea to be silent. They're our, you know, this is our uncle we don't talk about in the family, or this is our aunt or our cousin, and it still goes on because
right.
we are still perceived as a drag, not to mm-hmm. use the term, on getting basic rights for LGB when T doesn't get anything and keeps getting lost. And HRC, actually, we had a huge protest against HRC in early 2000s for not including us in ENDA.
Oh, really?
And then we all know what happened in 2007.
Yeah.
We were in ENDA, then we weren't at ENDA, and that blew up in everybody's faces.
Right.
And that was
yeah.
greatly embarrassing to HRC. So it's been it's always been a struggle as the forgotten step cousin in LGBT.
Okay, let's talk about your real life. Okay, you have a family?
I don't have a life. I have a 25-year-old daughter
great,
who lives
great.
With me.
She lives with you. And where do you live?
Well, I live in the Catskill Mountains. They're up in New York State. They're actually, they're the same thing as the Pocono Mountains, but we're in New York, so they have a different name.
Right.
And I have a small place up here on 22 acres, a house, a few horses, a pond. I get to work from home for Accenture, so that's really, really great. So you know,
that's
I get
great.
Up, I finish my work job, I go outside and play.
Horses, 22 acres, that's not small.
Well, there are people up here with 200 acres. Small is relative.
Small is
I mean,
relative.
I grew up on Long Island, and we had a little plot like everybody else did. So in
right.
some ways, 22 acres when I first bought seemed like a lot.
Right, right. It's all relative. I live in a small condo in a high-rise in Fort Lauderdale right on the beach. So, I mean, I've got...
So you'd see it right. So when I'm down, I can bring my bathing suit and I can swim in front of your place?
Right in front, yeah. Just run out and you're right there, yes. It's
good,
because
I'm going to do the snowbird thing.
Oh, you know what? I did it and I stuck. I got stuck here like a lot of people. What's it like politically in a small town? Just give us a little example of what your day-to-day politics are in a small town, because it's completely different than the big city, I'm sure.
Actually, in some ways it's not. Other than, you know, we only have one diner to go to in town type of thing. I live in a very LGBT, a very rainbow-friendly community.
Good.
It wasn't by intent. I fell in love with the area before I fell in love with the community. In fact, a couple of years ago, in 2009, I ran for town council and only lost by a handful of votes.
Great.
That would have made – you know, I didn't run because I was transgender. I didn't run on that platform.
Uh-huh.
I ran on because I can contribute to the community.
Right.
And I didn't run this last time, but I'll probably run in 2 more years. And if I do win, and I suspect I'll have a good chance of winning, I will be the, you know, indirectly the first out transgendered elected public official in New York State.
Great.
Yeah, it'll be kind of interesting. I don't look for these things. I just want to do my thing, you know. I think the promise for so many transgendered folks was that to have an ordinary life. Just
right.
to be like our next-door neighbors, which is no different than what gays and lesbians want. We want to worry about, did I forget the milk coming home? Or will my honey yell at me?
Right.
You know, and so up here, I've worked very hard to have an ordinary life. People know I'm transgender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like it's an open secret. It's just, well, that's Denise.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
And it's just part of the daily landscape up here.
Right, right. Yeah, someday we'll be as exotic as being Swedish or something like that. You know,
yeah, exactly. I mean, that's my point. The whole fight is just so we can be ordinary people like our neighbors and worry about the ordinary things.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Listen, we only have about 30 seconds left. I just want to remind everybody that's in the local Fort Lauderdale, Miami area that next Friday night, March the 30th at 6 p.m., from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Denise will be given the Stonewall Spirit of Pride Award at Stonewall National Museum and Archives, 1300 East Sunrise Boulevard. The event is free and open to the public. Good night, Denise. It was the fastest 30 minutes. I told you.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again sometime.
We will. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, Nate. Good night.